Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I've been saying that for a couple of years. Actually, we've done one podcast together, but it was way back a few years ago. And I really, really enjoyed it. I think that we, at that time, it wasn't baseballs and boring. I think it was the Bradfo show. And I think we designated you like our chief movie critic or something like that.
Yeah. You know, since, I've had a daughter a couple of years ago, so my movie watching has really taken a nose.
You lost the title. Come on, get your priorities straight.
Yeah.
But in all sincerity, congratulations. Spoiler alert, end of the most recent part of your unbelievable story, your awesome story, is that you have signed a minor league deal with the Red Sox, invite to the major league camp, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Which is just great. It's going to be awesome because I get to hand deliver the Baseballs and Boring shirt to you in person in Fort Myers. Before we get to sort of the journey, the path, tell me really quick just how this came about, like how this came up. Because we, you know, last time the Red Sox fans, and this is a national thing, so in case people don't pay attention, part of Robert's story is that in 2020 he signed with the Red Sox. Pitched there, eliciting one of the greatest tweets of all time from his wife, correct?
Yep.
Yes. Let me hold on one second. I want to pay off on this tease here. But Sarah Stock, and if anyone wants to follow Sarah, it's at Sarah_Stock, on September 1st, 2020. Zero times divorced, but if he keeps walking the leadoff batter, I'll consider filing. Just, she hasn't pinned on her. It's just so good. So anyway, you were with the Red Sox back then, but so how did this come about?
So I tore my hamstring running the bases, you know, when I was hitting during a start of mine in 2021, and that's the last time that I ever was on a Major League Baseball field since then, because I spent the next year in Korea in 22. I spent 23. The Brewers signed me to a minor league deal, and I was just horrendous. So I went to independent baseball, and then last year, you know, the only job I could get was playing in the Mexican Summer League. And when that season ended, I still couldn't get any nibbles from an affiliated team. So I went down to the Winter League, where I continued to work and develop my pitches, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a sec. But I had a lot of success in the Winter League, and the Red Sox talked to my agent a couple of weeks ago, and now we're here.
So you, and congratulations, you won the Triple Crown in the Mexican Winter League, pitching Triple Crown. So you obviously did very, very well. When you're going through that, you go through December, and the Red Sox reach out. Even as good as you are, I don't know if there were other teams reaching out, if that was sort of out of the blue, the Red Sox came in. Like, what was that like? Because as you said, you go the entire year in Mexico, and then you have to go to the winter leagues. You're probably thinking, okay, I need the phone call. I need the phone call, right?
Yeah. You know, I was aware that, I thought that I was pitching pretty well. I thought that, you know, there's two things in general that, someone in my spot, a team would be looking for, is both your statistics and also just your underlying pitch metrics, and I thought they both were pretty good. So I was waiting to hope that the phone would ring. And if it's a coincidence that it's right after the Pitching Ninja made a little video compilation of me, I don't know. But like a day or two later, a couple teams, the Red Sox included, reached out to my agent, and you know, just obviously when you're in my position, you look at which team looks like the best fit for you. And I thought that the Red Sox organization, you having played with them before a couple of years ago, was the best spot for me. So that's why I'm.
Isn't it amazing? It's amazing. I mean, I totally buy like the pitching ninja thing. It's like, because they can have scouts and they can have reports, but sometimes it just takes that. Oh my goodness. Look at this. This is worth highlighting. And I don't know. If when that came out, we're in friends of the program pitching ninja Rob Freeman. When that came out, were you like, yeah, good. At least I have this. Right.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, it's pitching ninja has become so ubiquitous through like, baseball Twitter as just a great, and I guess, you know, YouTube and Instagram as well, as just a great source of, baseball, entertainment that anytime that I'm on there is, it's fun for me, but, you know, it's possible that it helped, but also this time of year is usually when teams start to get down into the, you know, the guys like me that are not high on the priority list, but it's like, okay, let's see where these guys are falling and kind of pick and choose who they want to bring into their organizations.
Well, and I apologize because there's going to be some cliche questions here, but one of the cliche questions is really you get to this point in December, you pitch well. But, you know, you're in your mid 30s. You've gone through the ringer here. You're in Mexico. If you don't get that call in December, like, did you feel like you were, number one, did you feel like you were going to get a call? Did you always have that belief that I still am going to get a call? Because a lot of times guys don't get calls. I mean, we had Rich Hill, who comes on the program a lot. He, last year, he got one call. Like he got one call.
Right.
And so did you feel like you were gonna get that call ultimately? And if you didn't, say by the time January 1st, what would you have done?
Yeah. I was trying to not think about it, right? Because you never want to get your hopes up. And if I didn't get the call, then I was just gonna head back to play, you know, finish out the Winter League season where they're in the playoffs right now and, head back to the Summer League for Mexico, right? So, one thing is for sure, that's that I'm not going to stop pitching anytime soon. So, it's just what team am I pitching for? And pitching for the Red Sox is, you know, the height of many people's dreams, including, you know, one of mine. So,
well, you've already done it. I mean, you've already, but honestly, like it's such a good story and I'm so happy for you. And I think a lot of people, cause that 2020 season was just, you know, it was weird. It was weird all around. And we get the chance to like meet face to face in person. You get the chance to pitch at Fenway Park, hopefully in front of people, all of it. But it's funny, and I do have to go back to sort of the rest of your story for people. And I'm going to take the easy way out and just rifle through Wikipedia. So I apologize.
Sure.
And you please correct me if I'm wrong or if I am misguided, at all. So go to USC, by the way, Kituat Cattaliers, pitching the Cape Cod League. Excellent job. So you were taken with the 67th overall selection in the second round by the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, why is it noticeable or why is that notable on this podcast? Because the owner of the LLC of this podcast was taken one round later by the exact same team, Joe Kelly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I was playing a lot with Joe in A-ball before he quickly rose up the ranks and left me behind, still in A-ball. So
I think you said you had some good, like, riding in cars with Joe Kelly stories last time. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, what's crazy is how good he was, you know, 10, 15 years ago at video games, like the little shooter games. He would play one versus three of us and just go like 45-0 and just wipe the floor with us.
Well, I think the last time we talked, we hadn't even Joe Kelly had not written a book, and now he has written a book, which I co-authored. And in that book, coincidentally or not coincidentally, he said if he wasn't a baseball player, he would be an undercover DEA agent. You know, which shaving his head, getting the neck tattoos with the gun. So yeah.
There's a lot of stuff I could believe Joe Kelly capable of, and that's one of them.
All right. So you signed with the Cardinals, but as a catcher, you're a catcher. And so you go through as a catcher in, that was 2009. Finally in 2013, you say, okay, Cardinals, I want to become a pitcher. You become a pitcher for them. Cardinals release you in 2014, December, at the end of 2014. 2015 in March, you sign with the Astros. You get released by them, but then you get picked up by the Pirates. Everyone, just stay with me for a second. This is why it's such a good story. So at the end of 2015, you become a free agent. Now you have to go to independent league for the first time. You play for the New Jersey Jackals. And there's one quote in here. It's funny. So now we're talking 2016. And you have one quote in here where someone asks you about stopping to play baseball. You said, you know, one off season, I was living in my parents' basement and I was playing video games and my mother said, go out and do something. And I said, Mom, relax. I'm going to play major league someday. And like, but they're asking you, Robert, in 2016, are you going to keep playing baseball? And here we are 9 years later. Like, yeah. I just want to pause right there to say, okay, listen, that's part of the whole story, right?
Sure, sure. Yeah, no, it's, you know, I've always had the thought process that, if you can do two things, which is, stay healthy and continue to improve, then you should just play for as long as you can because you're only just going to get better and better. And, I think that I'm capable of doing those things. And, you know, my plans, I'm 35 right now. And, if I stopped before I was 50, that would be disappointing to me. So,
Good. And I think you also said, and maybe this is getting a little too wonky, but about staying healthy, about, you know, not having to do all the bells and whistles. If you take the basic care of yourself, you know, I know like guys don't ice as much, nearly as ice, whatever it is, but if you just take the basic care of yourself, you're going to be okay. Am I simplifying that too much?
Well, you know, like, it's basically comes down to any time that you're in the gym, that's movement practice, right? And so there's, you know, everyone has different ways of going about the gym. And the way that I've found, like the people that I train with, I think it's just the best stuff out there for staying healthy. So you know how to move in such a way that you stay healthy. A lot of people throughout their careers, they get injured and their rehab, they don't quite ever get back to where they were before. Instead, they just kind of accumulate a bunch of little nagging injuries that they have to have movement compensations patterns for until you're running like Albert Pujols at the end of his career, right? Just because of every year it just piles on and piles on. So if you can avoid those injuries and actually get better at moving over the years because you have more practice, then you know, you can play for a long, long time. So I'm trying to test that out.
Well, you're doing a good job. All right, we're going to go back. Here we go. We're going to go back into it. We left off in 2016. 2017, in March, you signed with the Reds. You were in the minor leagues there. You elect a free agency at the end of that year, November 6th. Now you go to the Padres and non-roster invitee in spring training, right? But major league spring training, right? Was first major league spring training? Is that what?
First major league spring training as a pitcher.
As a pitcher. Okay. Yeah. So, and then you're every sports writer's dream in spring training because you're throwing 100. We talked about this the other day. Yeah. If you get a guy, especially back then, if a guy shows up throwing 100 in spring training, people are writing stories about you. That's how it was. Yeah. But, and I don't know if you felt that as you were going along that year.
During the course of a season, you watch a lot of baseball games from the side as a player. And anytime that someone's in there throwing 100, the guy could have a 5 ERA, which I'm, you know, very familiar with. And, that's more entertaining than the guy that's just carving people up with a 2, but he's throwing like 90 miles an hour. It's just like 100. I want to see that. Right. So, I did that for, you know, quite a few years.
I may have asked you this before. I don't know, but do you, and I guess this is another cliche question, but one I love asking. Do you remember the first time you threw 100?
Yeah, in fact, I made a video and I posted it to YouTube when I did it in, I don't know, December of 2017.
Okay.
And I was so excited. I was so pumped up. I was just like dropping F-bombs and yelling to the skies that my next throw, maybe my next two throws, were 101. And I didn't throw 101 again for like a year or two more of training. But in that moment, I was so excited. And this is just like on a backfield at my high school in December.
Really?
For the first time. Yeah.
That's awesome that you documented. So when you're doing that, you have the camera set up and everything else. You're like, okay, here we go. I'm going to throw 100 right now. Yep. I mean, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, well, I knew I had the big league spring training invitation coming, you know, like right on the horizon. And so that's extra fuel to go out there and you're trying to impress people. Like, I'm going to throw 100. I'm going to do it.
I'm telling you, man, like you said, 100 is just, it's just hits different. Even now, it just hits different, especially in spring training. I mean, it's gold. I remember, and this is, I've told this story a bunch of times, but there were the Red Sox spring training in 2013. And they make the big trade, the Adrian Gonzalez, Josh Beckett, you know, Carl Crawford trade. And they get back a guy named Alan Webster, which no one really had heard of. And then Alan Webster, this guy starts throwing, I don't even think it was 100, it was 99. But it was, listen, it was everything. It was everything. So, but okay, so you make your major league debut with the Padres, June 20, yep. I don't need to tell you this, June 24th, 2018. Right. Yeah. Does that seem like a long time ago? I mean, obviously that's a huge part of your life.
It seems like significantly longer ago than it actually was when I think about things that happened 10 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever. It seems like, you know, a decade ago that happened.
What do you remember the most? I mean, what do you remember the most about that day?
I remember probably the most about that day is just the feeling, cause it was a tie game in extra innings. And the feeling of the first guy hits a double and just like checking him at second going, I'm one pitch away from losing the game without even getting an out in my first appearance ever. Like, is this really going to happen? And then just, but then, you know, you've been in enough situations where you say, hey, it could happen. But what can you do but just go make your best pitch? And I got a couple strikeouts and got out of the inning. So it's good.
Yeah. I mean, was it what you thought it envisioned like that? I mean, I have to ask because I've never been a major league pitcher, but
yeah,
was it what you thought? We see the image, the movie Lucas Giolito has now been dubbed the movie critic for which we can all get together at spring training and now and go watch a movie and critique it.
Yeah, right? No, that'd be good. Yeah,
but if you know, I'll get you a babysitter. It'll be all good. we have it in the budget, but the movie The Rookie is obviously the movie that. You showing up at the clubhouse and seeing the uniform and walking out from the bullpen. And
yeah, like,
I don't know if that's, if
yeah, it's, you can't understate. It's hard to understate just how incredible the major leagues is, right? Like I played in Korea and Mexico in the minor leagues and nothing even holds a candle to what it's like playing in the major leagues. When you talk about, firstly, it's just the pinnacle of professional baseball, right? It's every player in any league aspires to be in the best one, which is the major leagues. And that comes with like when you're off the field, even the playing surface is just immaculate. And then, you know, all the bells and whistles of these big, nice planes and the steak after the game, just like everything about it is so nice and so luxurious that when you're on the field, like you've never had more pressure because you want to continue to be there. Right. And yeah. So does everybody else. And so at the same time that you're getting all this like amazing treatment and stuff, you've never played anything higher stakes, even remotely as close. So it's a double-edged sword playing in the major leagues.
And as you're talking, I'm thinking, oh man, you're going to be immersed back in a major league clubhouse. You get spring training per diem. Congratulations. I mean, it's Fort Myers, but still. But yeah, it's a cool thing, but we'll get to that in a second. Another part of, this is one of the things you're a guy that you'll be sharing that clubhouse with. You actually have, there's a very unique factoid in this, aforementioned Wikipedia page. And you share something with him that's something you did in 2018. Unless you've scoured through your Wikipedia page lately, you're not going to get this.
No, I have no idea what
you're all right. In 2018, I love this fact. I don't know why someone put it here though. You threw 11 of the 12 fastest pitches by San Diego pitchers in 2018. That's not it. 2018, he had the second lowest swing rate for his in-strike zone sliders of any pitcher in baseball.
Love it. Love
43.1%. Who had the highest?
I don't know.
Aroldis Chapman.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's pretty good.
I think, that just comes from you look at this guy and especially at the time, like he's shaking his head and twisting and grunting. Of course he's going to throw a fastball. And then all of a sudden it's a slider. You're like, I don't want that. Give me the next one. Right. So
Which is getting me excited to talk about the evolution of you as a pitcher. All right, so 2019, you're in the minor leagues with the Padres. And then in 2019, claimed off waivers by the Philadelphia Phillies. Who could forget the Phillies' tenure from October 30th, 2019 to being designated for assignment July 23rd, 2020. I mean, that was right before teams did that weird, COVID season.
Yeah, that was on opening day of the COVID season.
Opening day?
Yeah. I think because I had been claimed while I was hurt, there were some roster stipulations that they weren't allowed to get rid of me until that day. So who knows when they would have got rid of me if they could have done so early. But
what a weird year. But anyway, 3 days later, you're claimed by the Red Sox, and next thing you know, you're pitching for the Boston Red Sox in the major leagues again. Which elicited a great tweet from your wife and also some good memories. I mean, some good, you pitch at Fenway Park and.
I've never pitched in Fenway Park with fans there, but I've done some part of it.
It's baby steps. So here we go. All right. In November, you're designated for assignment. The Cubs pick you up in December. I mean, everyone just take a breath here and understand all the things that I've read off, okay? This is perseverance, and this is also, as we're going to show you, evolution. Clear waivers, go to the Cubs minor leagues, option to Iowa, plays in the minor leagues that year in 2020, 2021, right? 2021, claimed off waivers from the Mets, June 22nd, 2021. And then in 2022, you signed with, as you said, with the Doosan Bears, which is a nice payday for you, right? I mean, it was in a good
experience. Yeah, that's right? The most I've ever been paid for an entire season. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I said, according to this, $700,000. So good for you. And also, again, for a guy who it seems like you like experiencing a lot of things, it's good experience, right?
Oh yeah, no, it really helped form my, notion of what pitching is internationally, right? Before then I really had experienced one winter in Mexico, but other than that, just affiliated baseball and I guess, indie ball as well, but, it's completely different when you go overseas. So it's good to have that.
What was
knowledge.
The thing that jumped out the most, like pitching there that maybe you didn't expect?
Well, since then, Korea has implemented the automatic strike zone in the league. But I thought that the strike zone that they were calling for me was just minuscule. I'd go back and look at the broadcast and be like, what are we doing? Right. So I felt like it was a little bit unfair. But since then, that doesn't exist anymore because now it's just the computer calling balls and strikes.
All right. Well, get used to it. So it's coming. All right. So 2023, you come back to the United States. You pitch in the Brewers organization all the way up until June, and then you sign with the go back to independent league with the Long Island Ducks, where you pitch a no hitter, right? Correct?
Yeah.
It was a perfect game of no hitter. I should know.
No hitter.
Good enough. No hitter. Well, that was. I mean, let's take a breath here. Catcher, second round catcher, just pitches a no hitter.
I was a second round catcher in 2009, and then I throwing a no hitter in the indie leagues in 2023.
What was the thing that you remember about that the most?
After the game, the manager Wally Bachman giving me a big glass of scotch and saying, "Drink up, here's this for you." And I don't really drink at all, so I thought it tasted disgusting.
What I took away from that was that you played for Wally Backman, so that was like,
yep.
Yeah, so that's always a trip. All right, 2000, and then last year, as you point out, you pitch in the Mexican League, both in the Summer League and then the Winter League. All right, and also, by the way, we shouldn't discount. You played for Team Israel in the WBC too, right?
Yeah, that was a blast. That's high up in my career of like fun times playing baseball.
So what, I am going to continue this theme. What is the thing that jumps out about that? Was there a game? Was there a team that you, because what venues did you play in?
We played only at the Marlins Park
Marlins Park.
And I closed and got the save against Nicaragua, and then I started and lost against Venezuela. So,
and anybody who went to any of those games just knows that it was nutty. I mean, it was, especially I would imagine Venezuela game, like those fans came out.
Yeah, no, there's, you know, the World Baseball Classic in general, both for the players and the fans, there's a different level of, really, it's just, I guess, like nationalism that makes the games feel like they have a different meaning than Major League Baseball games. Obviously, the, you know, they're a totally different animal, but World Baseball Classic, I think, is such a great addition to the baseball schedule that it's really an enhances baseball worldwide, so I'm glad that it exists.
It was great. I was sort of crapping over it 10 years ago, whatever, but the evolution of it, getting the players they did, getting the stories that they did, and obviously it culminating in one of the most memorable at-bats, I think. I'm not even going to, like, lie. I thought one of the most memorable bats in baseball history. I don't care if it's exhibition, Shohei Ohtani against Mike Trout. We're gonna look back at that and say that was like, oh, remember when Babe, it could have been on a barnstorming tour with Babe Ruth facing Lou Gehrig. It doesn't matter. You remember it. So,
yep.
Congratulations on being part of that. All right. So as you said, you pitched really, really well. But as you also, we go back to social media, as you also point out, you do not throw the same, right?
Yeah, no. Basically, part of my journey and evolution as a pitcher is being like, okay, why am I not good? You know, well, you can say, oh, well, you know, I walk too many guys, but then I look at it, it's like, but I throw, like, my strike percentage is not bad. It's just that when I get them to two strikes, they don't strike out. They keep on fouling it until I throw enough balls that they walk. It's like, okay, why is that? And it's because the shape of your pitches, the way that they move, it might be fast, but it's really super average. It's really bad to be average baseball, right? And so I've had to figure out over the years how to throw just a better moving pitch. And for me, I kind of naturally incline towards throwing a sinker. I'm really bad at backspinning it. So if you can't backspin it, which gets it to go up, you want to throw it extremely inefficiently, throw it to the side. And over the years, that's translated into throwing sidearm. And it was when the Brewers signed me out of Korea, they said, okay, Robert, a sinker is your path forward, but getting back to major leagues. And I totally agreed with them. But when I went out to the season, like, I could not throw a dang strike. Just the ball was going everywhere. And so it took me basically a year and a half to be able to figure out how to throw a strike, and that it was even easier if you threw sidearm. Just the movement got way better. And so that I've really leaned into that this winter by throwing exclusively sidearm.
So there's a few questions I have. Number one, when did you take that, hey, I got to change things? And we're going to get to the sidearm thing in a second, but when did you get to the fact that all the things that you said, the two strikes, when did you, do you remember saying, this isn't working?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, when in Korea, I was starting. That's the first time that I ever went through a whole season starting. And I'm throwing, you know, 99 miles an hour in Korea, which is significantly faster than anyone else in the league except for.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
For one other guy, I think. And my results are just like, they were fine. You know, they were decent enough, but I should just be dominating these guys. And the problem, you know, it's like when I look into it, it's like, okay, the if the average fastball moves 15 inches upwards, mine only moves 12, and those 3 inches, well, that's like the size of the barrel, right? So they're hitting it when it should be just going over the bat. And so, all of the pitch metric stuff that like old guys might kind of poo poo, like, what is this? We didn't have that. It's like, well, the guys who made it, they did have those things. It just wasn't quantified, right? Mm-hmm. And so we can put our fingers on exactly what makes someone good. And, that makes it more easy to train for it.
So now we go to the act of dropping down because, yeah. You know, and I encourage people to go look at your social media account to show this because it is pretty dramatic. And dropping down isn't, we could say, oh, well, I'll just drop down. Well, easier said than done. You had been, first of all, when you were a catcher, you're probably throwing behind your ear,
yep,
you know?
Yep,
and so now this is the exact opposite of that.
Right.
So how was that someone's suggestion? Was that something you did on your own? When did you take that leap of faith to drop down?
Yeah, really, it was something that kind of evolved over the course of the season in Mexico during the summer, where
this past summer,
oh, yeah. I just like, I threw this pitch and I was a little bit more to the side than I am usual, but it had a pretty good effect. Okay, well, maybe I'll do the same thing. Well, maybe I'll try and do a little bit more, right? So like, if you were to look at my arm slot over the course of 2 months, you would see it probably get lower and lower until I finally like, okay, I know what I'm doing here. I'm throwing it completely from the side. Let's just do that every pitch.
and you saw the results like,
yeah, all of a sudden, you know, I think, I had a really good season in the Mexican Summer League, but I also maybe gave up the most hits or the second most hits in the league, right? They were all singles because I was throwing sinkers, but, still not fun to give a bunch of hits. And the more I threw sidearm, it's like, okay, I'm having all the good effects and just giving up way fewer, balls that land in the outfield that go past the infielders, whatever. So, you know, just trial and error.
But you get to the Winter League and you felt like, okay, I'm sort of, I was evolving in the Summer League. Now I'm hitting my stride in the Winter League. And obviously when you win the Triple Crown in any league, you're doing something right. Did you feel like we never figure everything out, but I figured it out. Like I figured out more than I ever thought I would figure it out.
Yeah. I figured out a lot of what I need to do to be successful. And of course there's, many more things that I can do to be, you know, much better even. When I went in to begin the Winter League, I would still throw over the top to left-handed hitters and sidearm to right-handed hitters. And after my second start, I said, screw it. I'm doing the same for everybody. And, the reason why you might want to switch is because, basically when the ball moves, like an old pitching adage is that you want to throw hard in and soft away. And so your fastball naturally moves hard in to a right-handed hitter, but the opposite to a lefty. And so that's why there's different strategies for both sides. But I said, I don't even care that this might be inopportune against lefties. It's just so much better than my other way. I'm just going to do it to everybody.
Did, and we are able to quantify this stuff. I don't know how much technology they have in the Mexican League. Obviously they probably have more in the minor leagues, major leagues, whatever it is. But were you able to find out the differences and when you started doing this in terms of numbers and technology?
Yes. Yeah. The Mexican leagues use TrackMan, which is what they use in the minor leagues until you get to AAA. And then AAA, they use, like the StatCast system. I don't know if that's Hawkeye or not, but basically AAA in the big leagues has just every bell and whistle. That's crazy. They can track, you know, the ball boy runs on the field and you can see a little dot tracking his movement or whatever, you know, But other than that, the Mexican leagues, AA, single A, whatever, use TrackMan, which tells you the pitch metrics and the batted ball metrics.
Okay. So one of the things that teams do now, and it has worked, like they because of this technology, they were able to take somebody like yourself and say, we see this. We see that you're doing this well. Mm-hmm. We've tracked it. We've scouted it. So once you get in our pitching lab, now we're going to go. And I know that you talked to some team, I don't know, I'm sure you're going to have a lot more conversations with the Red Sox, but when you did agree, did they talk to you about any of this stuff?
I'm scheduled to talk to the Red Sox pitching coach today. So, you know,
tell him I said hello.
Okay.
Yeah. I just gave Andrew Bailey a baseballs and boring sticker, 72 hours ago.
Right.
So. Yeah, tell him I said hello. Tell him I sign off on your signing.
Perfect.
Carry a lot of weight, but good. I'm glad you are. So anyway, but yeah, but it's that'll be the fun part, right? I mean, you get to Fort Myers, you talk to Andrew Bailey, you talk to these guys, all this stuff. It sounds like a lot of this stuff you just sort of did on your own almost, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's something that, if you really want to take your career into your own hands and not just rely on luck, you really as a pitcher need to know, you need to know this stuff, all this metric stuff. Like, you could be lucky and just naturally do it, but let's assume you're not one of the 20 guys in the world that is really good at doing it. you need to know a lot about it so that you, everything is trial and error. But if you don't know what you're trying for, if you don't know what constitutes a success or a failure, your trial and error system is not going to be nearly as efficient, and you probably won't make it to the major leagues.
Again, I told you there was going to be a couple cliche questions. Another one is, was there ever, you know, you have a young family, you know, all of that. There's a lot of sacrifice that your wife has to make. Now you have a child, and was there ever a time where you'd like, okay, maybe I'm moving on. I've tried, I'm moving on. Was there ever that time?
Honestly, no. You know, and certainly, you know, I was playing winter ball this year. I didn't get to do any of the seasonal holidays. I, you know, wasn't there for birthdays, for Christmas, whatever. Just knowing that I think I'm capable of being a really good major league pitcher. And if I just put in the hard work now, it can pay off in the future. And if it's not going to pay off in the future, well, then we'll figure that out. But for now, I'm all in on making it happen.
I mean, how of the excitement that you've had throughout your career, because when you're 2018, you make the major leagues, but you're in your 20s.
Yeah.
You know, you're mid-20s. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're going and you're going and you're going. And even though you were a catcher before, fine. You know, you're still like, I'm evolving. I'm going to be a major leaguer and I'm here. I'm in major leagues. Of all the times, this time must be one of the most exciting things that you've gone through. Because of all the things that we've gone through, all the things that we've talked about, all the things that you've gone through, and just being in a major league camp around major leaguers with this information, I'm pumping you up right now. I'm lower the heart rate. But yeah. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we're only a few weeks away. You must be jacked up, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of the times where I have the highest expectations for myself, because to be 35 and completely out of options means that you're about as least desirable as possible for a major league team to care about signing you, right? Since the restructure of the minor leagues, there's fewer spots that a team can have in their organization. So, you know, you sign a guy like me, a 35-year-old, maybe you're not signing a 20-year-old that you could have been putting an eight ball. And if you think about minor leaguers as lottery tickets, right? The younger they are, the more that they could be a huge winner, right? Whereas as a 35-year-old, a team goes like, we're pretty sure that lottery ticket's been scratched and we know, you know, about what they're capable of. And so to get signed, like, you've got to be pretty dang good. So I can pat myself on the back for that. But that being said, then I have just an incredible amount of expectations that I need to go in. And this is like a last hurrah, right? If I can't be good at 35, like, who's going to want to sign me at 37 or something like that, right? So I can pat myself on the back and feel good about getting back in, but also know that, like, if you want this, you know, you better hit the ground running, because this is the last chance.
You just took the words out of my mouth. I mean, yeah. This is the other part that people don't understand about spring training a lot of times, is that, you know, the guys, the veteran guys, the guys who are on the 40 man, or even the younger guys, they can come in. And if you want to go back to the 70s, they could come in wearing their rubber suits, you know, smoking cigarettes and say, I'll work my way into shape. But then there's guys that, you know, from day one, you have to sort of impress, and every single day matters. And it's unfair a lot of times, Robert. You know this, like, it's unfair because it's spring training and you should be able to be working on things.
Yep.
But that's not really the case.
Yeah, no. And so, you know, for instance, I threw 220 innings across summer and winter ball. So the moment that the Red Sox signed me, I haven't thrown now for 10 days. I'm going to give myself 10 days to rest after, you know, a workload that would be one of the highest in all of baseball. And but then after that, it's like, okay, let's go get ready for spring training, because like you said, you know, we're going to show up, we're going to have a bullpen, and then right into a live batting practice, which I've been in organizations where, like, we don't call it batting practice, it's really live pitching practice. And then you're going to be in a game right away, and you know, one outing where you walk two guys and think, okay, that's nice, go down to minor league camp now, you know.
And so, you know what, it's not only, and I'm not putting more pressure on you, but this is reality, it's not only the outings, it's not only the results, which is, that's part of it, it's also they have more, as we say, more the TrackMans and everything else. They're like the Red Sox, every single bullpen, the way it's lined up, they'll just have these five mounds, like outside the clubhouse, where you're warming up or you're throwing bullpens, whatever it is, but every single mound has a portable TrackMan on it. And so every single thing is measured. So it's one of the things, honestly, Robert, I talked to Adam Ottavino about, in the season, which is sort of it's a tough thing, because if someone goes out to the bullpen and said, we want you to throw a new pitch, then they're measuring it right away in, mm-hmm. 10 different ways. So if they don't see it, they're like, so you're doing max effort. You have to make sure, what I'm saying is that when you go out there, even the bullpens, everything is being tracked. Everything is being monitored. So
I would say that, as someone that's been around for a while and seen, like, you know, what are they ultimately looking for? What are the front office? What are the coaches looking for you to get outs in the game? Right.
Yeah.
So all of these tools are there to try and help you figure, like, well, how can you best get outs? Right. But if you go in and say, you know, like, you know what, I'm really good at pitching in the game, and I don't really care about lighting up the numbers in the bullpen, that's fine. Go get outs in the game. You'll find yourself in the major leagues if you know.
Right.
Do that, so.
They can make, and thank you for correcting me, because again, you've gone through this and I haven't, and you're right. And so what ultimately will happen. This is will happen. I'm saying this is going to happen. Is that no matter what measurements they have. Ultimately, if you go out and pitch a 1-2-3 inning, you get hitters' reactions saying, what? Right?
Yep.
That is 10 times, 100 times more important than all that nonsense that I was talking about before. So, yeah.
Well, you know, like people get so upset with modern baseball. Like, they're just out there trying to throw hard and hit home runs. It's like, they're trying to win baseball games. If you have a better way of winning baseball games, you'll have – million, like, okay, cool, now you're worth millions to a team to hire you, but until you can implement that at any sort of, you know, level, they're not interested. And you know, good luck seeing if hitting the corners at 85 works in Major League Baseball, you know.
I, one of the last questions, how has you're a student of the game, how has pitching changed for you? Like, you throw 100, great. Yep. We've already documented that. But how is pitching in Major League Baseball changed for you?
Yeah, so when I signed in 2009, and I've just seen just like just a revolution of stuff. You know, when I was in high school, I could throw 95 in high school, and that was like, I was the number one pitching prospect. Like, look at this guy, he's throwing 95, and now I look at the guys getting drafted, and you have, you know, Hunter Green throwing 102 when he's drafted, and the elevation, and that means the hitters, they're still scoring runs like they were, you know, 10 years ago. So that means the hitters have evolved too. So it's incredible how the game has continued to, be, you know, like a warfare, like a weapons arms race, right? And, I can't imagine how it's going to keep on going like that forever, but every year it does, you know. We just saw a video of, a guy throwing 88 mile an hour knuckleballs.
Yes.
What the heck?
Yes, you know? We were efforting to get him on the podcast.
Yeah,
which is, first of all, I love not good knuckleball story. But 88 is like, how do you possibly hit that? Like,
I made a tweet a little bit ago that said the future of pitching is just everyone throws 90 mile an hour knuckleballs, and there's nowhere to go from there because impossible to hit. But you know who. We'll see. You know, we'll see.
Have you ever tried to throw a knuckleball?
Yeah, and I'm terrible at it. And one of the times I got released, the Rays called me and they said, hey, we heard you throw an incredible knuckleball and we'd love you to come join a knuckleball program. And, you know, I said, I don't throw a good knuckleball and sorry, I'm not going to join the program. But when I went back to think about it, like they were probably just searching for anyone that they could convince to come join the program and wanted to hype you up a little bit that they had confidence in you, you know, but
I think I've heard that about that. They were like the knuckleball camp. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never really took root.
This was in like 2015.
Yeah. We had on last year, Mickey Janis, who throws a knuckleball and obviously, you know, Tim Wakefield is the GOAT. And I know that tweet was like, this is homage to Tim Wakefield. I think Papelbon said that. He's like, you know, will be never forgotten. And it's so great. It's true. It's yep. just awesome. But I can't believe that the Rays called you and said, hey, you want to throw a knuckleball for us?
Everyone knows that it's the most effective pitch if you can do it, but it's good luck doing it, you know?
Yeah. Well, last thing is, You said you don't go to movies, no more movies.
So less often, right? Like, I try and see if it's a Christopher Nolan film, if it's a film that you have to go see in the theater because it's like, you know, big action packed, then I probably saw that one. But, okay. Yeah.
All right. What's the last movie you saw in a theater? Gladiator 2? No,
I did see Gladiator 2 and I didn't like it at all.
Okay. Here's as I said, Giolito has already volunteered to be the movie critic, and we've already gone through this. But as the assistant movie critic, I will ask you this: the biggest problem I had with that movie, how in the world does anyone hear what anyone is saying when they're making the speeches? It was driving me nuts. When you're in the Colosseum and you're speaking to the whole Colosseum. There's no, and then the ultimate insult was at the very end when he's standing in the middle of the road making this speech and people from like 2 miles away are reacting to it.
Yeah. You know, so. Yeah. I think it's easier to get taken out of the film like that when you've been sitting there not invested in the characters, the plot's terrible. Then you start to like realize, you know, inaccuracies like that. So what
movie do you like? What movie jumps to mind?
I loved Dune from this past year. Right?
Okay.
In the beginning, there's a scene where you see the like, I don't know, the bad guys, Sark, something, whatever. They all sort of like start floating up the mountain. Mm-hmm. Floored. That's one of the top three moments in a movie theater I've ever had in my life. That is the coolest thing I have ever seen. Yeah.
So. Which is ironic because Dune was the first movie I ever walked out on, but I'm talking about the original Dune.
Yeah, the David Lynch Dune.
Yeah, the David Lynch Dune. Yeah. And then the other one is you're a voracious reader. Do you still read?
Yeah, I've been reading Brandon Sanderson's Stormlight Archives. It's like a fantasy series.
Okay.
I like to go, you know, read some fantasy and then read just books about science. My favorite science book ever is called A Short History of Nearly Everything by Bill Bryson. And he's an author that he'll find something that might seem mundane and make it like the most interesting thing you've read. So
you love science.
Love science.
I'm going to butcher this guy's name. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. Do you have a podcast guy besides coming on this podcast?
My brother and I did a limited edition or a limited run of 7 podcasts 7 years ago or something.
Okay.
Like
well, yeah. I listen to Smart List podcast, you know, Jason Bateman and,
that
one. And they had the guy who, anyway, they were talking about UFOs. I'm going to butcher this.
Sure.
He works for the government and he said, you don't understand like how much we know about UFOs, but we can't say. As a science guy, is kind of maybe I'm wrong. Is there any take on UFOs from you?
Oh, I think that you'd look.
By the way, they don't call it UFOs anymore.
Right.
Sorry. I forget what they call it. But go ahead.
My take on it is that are there aliens? Well, the universe is too vast for there not to not be, but it's so vast it seems unlikely that they crash land on Earth and they're just like messing around, giving people probes in the sky, right? So. I think that they're there and we've never encountered them.
Okay.
That's
That's how simplistic I am though. When you talk about science, I go to UFOs.
Fun stuff.
But science and baseball it's great. Like it's a great comment. Your mind, I love it.
Yeah. Science is figuring out the way the world works, right? It's more fun to understand something. And that leads you to know things that you would never have even, you know, put things together that you would never have even known existed because you understand how things work.
Well, science suggests that you have one of the most inspirational stories that I've come across in a long time.
Oh, thank you.
I appreciate you, Robert, and it's really, really good to talk to you once again. I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Perfect. Yeah. See you soon.